Blog Talk Radio.
Convention
attended the Constitutional Convention, fearing distrusted the political involvement of the people. Some, like Ben Franklin, initially disliked the Constitution, believing it cheated the people. While the Constitutional Convention was held because of dissatisfaction with the Articles of Confederation, the greater inspiration was the growing Shays Rebellion. Farmers and townspeople were revolting against increased tax burden and political repression by the ruling elite. It is clear that Shays Rebellion played an integral part of the genesis and formation of the U.S. Constitution. James Madison said, "This rebellion contributed more to that uneasiness which produced the convention than those from the inadequacy of the convention of the Confederation." Delegates at the convention wanted a strong central government to weaken the local power of the common people and to promote commerce. John Jay, the first Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, said, "The people who own the country ought to govern it." And the intention was to establish the rule of law, not the rule of the common people. The Constitution established America as a republic, not a democracy. James Madison said the two great points of difference between a democracy and a republic are the delegation of the government in the latter to a small number of citizens elected by the rest. Secondly, the greater number of citizens and greater sphere of country over which the latter may be extended. In 1828, Noah Webster's dictionary defined a republic as a commonwealth, a state in which the exercise of the sovereign power is lodged in representatives elected by the people. In modern usage, it differs from a democracy or a democratic state in which the people exercise the power of sovereignty in person. In a republic, the rights of all citizens are protected. In a democracy, there is a danger of tyranny from the majority. A republic exists under the rule of law, while a democracy is threatened by tyranny from the majority. Tocqueville said, "A democracy cannot exist as a permanent form of government. It can only exist until the voters discover that they can vote themselves largesse from the public treasure. From that moment on, the majority always votes for the candidate promising the most benefits from the public treasury, with the result that a democracy collapses over loose fiscal policy, always followed by a dictatorship." Folks, that's where we're headed now. Well, we have limited democracy in that the people are today allowed to directly elect members of Congress and to serve as jurors and on a grand jury. However, those who today think we are a democracy, not a republic, should remember that the Pledge of Allegiance is to the republic, not to the democracy. And the word democracy isn't even in the Constitution. Last year, I heard a radio speech by a president from the early 1920s. He called America's republic a republic. This was the first time I had heard a politician use the word to describe America. Today, as the people's rights are being replaced by false external trappings, we are constantly assured that America is a democracy. Before the New Deal, America was rarely referred to as democracy. The Constitution in Article 4, Section 4, says, "The U.S. shall guarantee in every state in this Union a republican form of government." Many people were aware that the new Constitution was preparing by the ruling elite. This is partly why many felt the Constitutional Convention had gone too far. In Rhode Island, where small farmers control state politics, the proposed Constitution was passed out to the people, and unlike in other states, they were allowed to directly vote on it. The result was 237-4 and 2,708 against the Constitution. Two states rejected the Constitution, and intense pressure, including secrecy and deceit, were used to ratify it. Delegates to the Pennsylvania legislature were dragged into to the assembly by a mob and forced to vote. In most states, the Constitution was approved because the state legislatures were from the ruling class, and the Federalist Papers were written to ease the concern of many, and some states ratified the Constitution with the understanding that a Bill of Rights would be added. The Bill of Rights was not originally in the Constitution, partly because the delegates were not overly interested in protecting the people's right, and the federal government was to have very limited powers. So many felt it wasn't needed. Pennsylvania delegate James Wilson said there was no need for a federal Bill of Rights because the new federal government would only have the power expressly delegated to it. Well, many felt that state sovereignty and each state Bill of Rights would be sufficient to protect the people, because governing would be mainly be done by state and local authorities. The difference between people today and those in the Revolutionary War is that then the average person understood they were trading rule by England for rule by the moneyed interest, and that people weren't always willing to accept the new rule. This is partly why the Shays and Whiskey Rebellion took place. Taxes were only part of the problem. Despite what historians claim, in contrast today, there is a myth that America is a democracy and there is no ruling elite, and until recently people have not been willing to defend their rights. In the 1930s, the oppressive action of the federal government would have caused riots in most cities if the people had been as determined as our forefathers to defend their rights. The myth that America is a real democracy has existed for many years, partly because the people have enjoyed certain rights lacking in most nations. At the turn of the last century, Brooks Adams said the choice of the ruling class was to coerce or bribe the majority. Now, the federal government is owned by the large corporations, and our rights are increasingly vanishing. Adam Smith in The Wealth of Nations warned that throughout history, there are always forces attempting to control the people to gain increased wealth and power. Smith said governments must act to control these forces, or there would be dreadful consequences. Smith identified the merchants and manufacturers as the principal architects of government policies that brought great harm to the English people. Max Weber warned, the question is how are freedom and democracy in the long run possible at all under the domination of highly developed capitalism? Freedom and democracy are only possible where the resolute will of a nation not to allow itself to be ruled like sheep is permanently alive. That so few people today participate in the political process is cause for great concern. Not only is there a vacuum in political leadership, but that void is being filled by a corporate elite with the ready approval of a controlled press. James Q. Wilson, past president of the American Political Science Association, said, "Elections have become less important because the real policymaking is now done by courts, bureaucracies, and legislatures operated by an ambitious political class and very little orientation toward public preferences. These people represent their own interests, not that of the people, and the very legitimacy of government is now at stake with so few people voting. People understand that they are no longer part of the decision-making process." Now, I take homage to that only because in the sense that people are voting, but their votes are being stolen. They're not being counted. You know, they're being destroyed. The GOP has been notorious at this for the last decade, right? And it will continue to be. You know, they're just horrible. You know, just, but the problem with this is that there's no public outrage to it. They just accept it. And, I've been crying about this. I've been yapping, crying about this on my radio show since, and television program since 2000. And wrote about it extensively in 2000 in my book *Naked at the Mic*. About the bold-faced theft, you know, of the last two 2000 and 2004 elections. All right? And you know, it just amazes me. You know, the outcry was not there, and the fraud was so rampant and so there. But it tells you that the majority of people in the country are, don't vote and don't care. All right? It's amazing. The question is how our freedom and democracy are no longer possible at all under the domination of highly developed capitalism. Just read that book. Freedom and democracy are only possible where the resolute will of a nation not to allow itself to be ruled like sheep is permanently alive. That so few people today participate in the political process is a cause of great concern. Not only is there a vacuum in political leadership, but that void is being filled by a corporate elite with the ready approval of a controlled press. And James O. Wilson, past president, I just read this, but you can see it in the bankers and the investors and the lobbyists and the people appointed to these czars and the Federal Reserve and everything that is governing us today is being governed by an elite, by cronies, capitalists, corporations. They put a token figurehead like Obama and he just follows their orders, or McCain, or Bush, or any yo-yo, all right? And to have somebody not follow them and to do what's right, even wonder if that's even possible. That's why a guy like Ron Paul, regardless, he's got a few bugs, is to stand up against these guys, to have somebody really stand up against these corporations and this establishment, is just takes a lot of nerve, but hopefully, he's got the kahunas to do it, if he were elected. Elections have become less important because the real policymaking is now done by courts, bureaucracies, legislatures. Very legitimacy of government is now at stake with so few people voting. The people understand that they are no longer part of that decision-making process. And there's a great quote out there I saw recently. It says, if voting was such a great thing, it would be illegal. In the 20th century, many people have discussed the ruling elite. Gaetano Mosca said, "All political regimes are of necessity ruled by an organized minority controlling a disorganized majority. The first class always." The less numerous, performs all political functions, monopolizes power, and enjoys the advantages that power brings, whereas the second, the more numerous class, is directed and controlled by the first, in a manner that is now more or less legal, now more or less arbitrary and violent. Noam Chomsky said in America, "The specialized class are offered the opportunity to manage public affairs by virtue of their subordination to those with real power in our societies, dominant business interests. These ideas have an unmistakable resemblance to the Leninist concept of a vanguard party that leads the masses to a better life that they cannot conceive or construct on their own." Lippmann's specialized class and Lenin's vanguard of revolutionary intellectuals will lead the way to a better society, however many must be sacrificed along the way. Supposedly, there must be the manufacture of consent, because the elite cannot trust public opinion, because only certain capable people can manage society. Harold Laswell said, when elites cannot use force to compel obedience, social managers must turn to a whole new technique of control, largely through propaganda. We must acknowledge the ignorance and stupidity of the masses, and not succumb to democratic dogmatism about men being the best judges of their own interests. These doctrines and others are entirely natural in any society in which power is narrowly concentrated, but formal mechanisms exist by which ordinary people may, in theory, play some role in shaping their own affairs, a threat that plainly must be barred. America does have more freedom for the people than in other Western societies, so the ignorant and stupid masses are more dangerous, as the state loses the capacity to control the population by force. Privileged sectors must find other methods to ensure that the rascal multitude is removed from the public arena. And the people can be permitted, even encouraged, to ratify the decisions of their betters in periodic elections. Jerry Spence, one of America's most respected criminal lawyers, said, in this country we embrace the myth that we are still a democracy, when we know that we are not a democracy, that we are not free, that the government does not serve us but subjugates us. Although we give lip service to the notion of freedom, we know the government is no longer the servant of the people, but at last has become the people's master. For the ultimate enemy of any people is not the angry hate groups that fester within, but a government itself that has lost its respect for the individual. The ultimate enemy of the democracy is not the drug dealer or the crooked politician or the crazed skinhead. The ultimate enemy is the new king that has become so powerful it can murder its own citizens with impunity. That's why Obama has become, A new tyranny has cast its cold and ugly shadow over the nation, a nation where the rights of the people, criminals, and citizens alike exist mostly in myth, where the police have become the handmaidens of power, where trials have become free to pillage and ravage, where trials have become mere window dressing and mockeries of justice, and where the corporations are left free to pillage and ravage the people with utter impunity. Entrapped in our concrete reservations, indentured to our corporate masters, impoverished of our land, separated from the earth, and at last placed at odds with nature herself, many no longer see the issue of freedom as relevant. It is a tyranny supported by the people, one that enslaves the people while it convinces the people they are free. We are delivered our power to our oppressors in exchange. We have delivered our power to our oppressors in exchange for their promise that we will be safe. We have accepted the myths of freedom as a fact in the place of freedom itself. We love our servitude, but why not? It often feels as good as freedom, and we can enjoy it without the risk that always accompanies the struggle for freedom. Too many Americans are willing to give up their freedom to feel safe. We speak about our rights as long as we don't have to sacrifice for them. We are free as long as we don't too vehemently express our beliefs. Then we may be labeled as political activists, terrorists, or racists, and paranoid extremist, and may be harassed by the police. William Grinder said, the decayed condition of American democracy is difficult to grasp. Symptoms of distress are accumulating freely in the political system, and citizens are demoralized by the lack of coherent remedies. The things that Americans are taught and still wish to believe about self-government, the articles of civic faith we loosely call democracy, no no longer can no longer seem to fit the present reality. The American democracy is in much deeper trouble than most people wish to acknowledge. Citizens are cut out of politics surrounding the most important governing questions. The representative system has undergone a grotesque distortion of its original purpose. Instead of real democracy, we get false promises and many new laws. The corporations control both political parties, and their people have become powerless in the political process. The elite decision makers are too cut off from the people to really understand or represent the people. The mutual understanding between citizens and government necessary for genuine democracy is now deformed or neglected. A genuine democracy will not likely develop until the two realms are reconciled. The irregular citizens and the formal structure of power. Modern representation has assumed a different purpose, taking care of clients, not the larger public interests. According to Ferdinand Lundberg, the general public is in most instances is completely helpless because it is disorganized and very much at odds within itself, lacking knowledge, single-minded leadership, and staying power. The national public must at all times also deal with many local and personal problems. It is therefore always easily defeated by determined, entrenched interests. Louis Lapman said, "In the name of making the world safe for democracy, the United States revised its own democratic traditions and constitutional principles. By presidential fiat and Defense Department decree, the new appointed guarantors of the world peace suppressed suppressed the turbulent and newly un-American habit of free speech. The government learned to define freedom as freedom for the state, not for the citizens. The national interest became the parochial interest of the ruling class, not the multifarious interests of the individuals subsumed under the rubric of the American people." The question was one of how a government by the judicious a few could best control and improve the instincts of the foolish many. The Constitution was made for the uses of the individual, and the institutions of the American government were meant to support the liberties of the people, not the ambitions of the state. It was the law that had to give way to the citizens' freedom of thought and action, not the citizens' freedom of thought and action that had to give way to the law. Today, the government reserves to itself unenumerated powers. It seeks to limit the freedoms of the individual to a list of enumerated powers. The increasingly punitive uses and interpretation of the law support the ambitions of the state, not the liberties of the people. Gore Vidal said, "Political decadence occurs when the forms that a state pretends to observe are known to be empty of all meaning. Who does not publicly worship the Constitution? Who, in practice, observes it at all? And Congress has only two great powers under the Constitution, the power to declare war and the power of the purse. Both have been largely lost to the national security state and the corporations." As Charles Beard demonstrated in Economic Basis of Politics, our Constitution is firmly based on private economic interests. The farmers saw their task as preserving liberty, but they also wanted to protect property rights as basic to liberty. The widespread ownership of land gave people an economic stake in their freedom and in their system. The founders were concerned with property rights and abstract rights because they wanted to protect the real rights of people. The founders felt that along with the separation of power and society, if a republic was based on commerce and industry, it would be easier to prevent a tyranny of the majority, and it would be easier to achieve material gain in such a republic, so the people would be more satisfied. However, increased use of maritime or commercial law has encroached upon constitutional and common law. Corporations attain rights, but not the responsibilities of citizens. Corporate welfare became more important than citizens' rights. The corporate elite appointed their representatives, the lawyers and judges, to flood the country with thousands of complex laws, often too long for even Congress to read and understand. Now, this was written in 1996, folks, and, you know, all of this stuff came to light after 9/11 and after the George Bush. I mean, this is how long, this is how far ahead this man was. And unfortunately, he was assassinated in 2000, I believe, year 2000, because of because of these of this book and other things that he was writing at the time. Now you can imagine how far ahead this is. I mean, this was written in 1996. It's simply amazing, and that was the during the second year, second term of actually the first the end of the first term of Bill Clinton, and
jury nullification was widely accepted for over 100
100 years before the founding of the Republic, people have a right and duty when on a jury to reject unjust laws. While it may be possible to improve the Constitution, I do not attack it, especially since the Bill of Rights was added. I agree with the founders, like Ben Franklin, who felt that by establishing a republic and a Bill of Rights, they were also protecting the people's rights. The problem is not the Constitution. It is the nature of human condition, Thucydides said. Of the gods we believe and of men we know that by necessity, law of their nature, they rule wherever they can. Most communist nations had a constitution with clauses protecting human rights. Such words had little value. Our constitution will only work if the people actively strive to protect their rights and if the rule of law prevails. If the large corporations are not stopped, our republic will one day become a distant memory. And already, most Americans think we are a democracy when, in fact, we are a republic. A republic should be reestablished with democratically oriented institutions. Boy, those words ring true more today than even then. And, you know, excuse me. I can't imagine what Brutus, if he was still alive today, what he would be writing. It'd be amazing. What he would be revealing. But the reason I promote this man's work is because man had integrity. The man is brilliant. He's a very good writer. But he had courage, you know, great courage to write what he did. Especially since he was more known for his work as a he had several other books by then: Flower Essences, Vibrational Healing, Gem Elixirs, and Vibrational Healing 1, Gem Elixirs and Vibrational Healing 2, Spiritual Property of Herbs. His work was not as much in this. I believe he's probably remembered more for this incredible volume. And he's a prophet, you know. He saw it. He saw what was going on. He understood. He tried to warn people, you know. And unfortunately, he got killed in the process. His next chapter is called The Secret Government, and I would read this if it weren't that I feel I'd like to skip over that because I feel, and I don't know, we may have enough time to delve into this chapter, but chapter 4 of this book is called Fooling the People. And I've been fooled so many times over the many years. But back in 1996, I was trying to remember going back into 1996, and I was going through some very serious personal issues myself at that time, through divorce and business and all kinds of problems. But it was a time when the last thing I was thinking about was this. And had I discovered these things back then, I don't know if I would even have... I wasn't even in a place where I could have exercised, you know, I wasn't involved politically back then. Not really. This was really before the internet. internet really took off, you know, and programming websites and this kind of thing were still were very costly to produce. You know, most people didn't have computers at that time, only very wealthy few people did, or businesses, of course, had them. But this was at the advent of, you know, the break of things. And in 1999, which incidentally was also the beginning of the ethics period, and of the Mayan calendar, and bringing us into the final days, if you will, ascension process and so on. But that was a change. And in that period of time, between 90, let's say probably 1990 to 2000, that 10-year window, the world changed. I mean, the world changed completely from primarily touchstone phones to, you know, internet, Skype, you know, Google, YouTube. Everything just changed. And even in the last 5 years, the changes have been so dramatic. And the technology and the sciences and so on, stuff we're seeing today. So for this man to have predicted what's going on politically, you know, almost 20 years ago now, or 15 years ago, this book, his words ring true and prophetic. But I want to get briefly through this, because I've got about 15 minutes left to the program, and I wanted to briefly read a few excerpts from this chapter. Fooling the people. The people never give up their liberties, but under some delusion. That was by Edmund Burke. And political language is designed to make lies sound truthful and murder respectable, and to give an appearance of solidity to pure wind, and the first step in liquidating a people is to erase its memory. As from George Orwell, fooling the people. There are many reasons why most people do not understand that our rights are being lost. People think we have a democracy with the people in charge because this is what the controlled national media tells us. Certain agencies like the CIA use public relations firms, authors, and journalists to fool the people and to perform roles the government cannot legally do. In the 1970s, it was revealed that the CIA had hired hundreds of journalists to shape public opinion. It would be extremely naive to not appreciate that such disinformation continues to manipulate and confuse the people. This propaganda, along with certain, with various rights, with various mind control techniques over the years, create a paradigm, as described by the philosopher Thomas S. Kuhn in The Structure of Scientific Revolutions. A paradigm represents a model of shared beliefs of the way the world works for most people. Theories help create facts, and people who exist inside a paradigm are quite comfortable with the facts that they are told. People who present information outside the existing paradigm are initially called silly. But gradually, as different views become a threat to the status quo, people with new ideas are demonized as crazy, extremist, or racist, and conflicting paradigms are sharply resisted. Boy, that is so true today. The Thought Crimes Prevention Act of 2007. I mean, that doesn't scare the hell out of you. I don't know what does. This helps explain why almost no one in the Western intelligence communities foresaw the collapse of the Soviet Union. Everyone believed this would never happen, so the possibility was ignored by all but a few people, like Senator Moynihan. One intelligence officer said in the late 1980s, he would have been put in a mental hospital if he had said the Soviet Union would soon was soon going to collapse. And despite growing contrary evidence inside the paradigm, everyone felt the Soviet Union remained a powerful and dangerous enemy, and other evidence was ignored or disbelieved. A crisis may cause the formation of a new paradigm, as many people work to reconstruct society with new institutions. Then society is divided into separate factions, not one defending the old paradigm, while the other group seeks to establish a new idea and institutions. Once this happens, normal political interaction may fail. A serious conflict is possible, and political revolutions may occur when groups of the population realize that existing institutions have ceased to properly meet their needs. Trying to turn the page here, but meet the needs of the people. Then the question is, can a new paradigm solve the problems that created a crisis in the old paradigm? Millions remain in a state of denial today, thinking all is well, while the Patriot Movement is getting stronger, partly because many people have broken out of the corporate-managed paradigm of America. That's interesting, isn't it? Millions remain in a state of denial, thinking all is well, while the Patriot Movement is getting stronger, partly because many people have broken out of the corporate-managed paradigm of America. Remember, in 1996 was when the Oklahoma bombing took place, as well as the Waco, Texas, and all that stuff. So Clinton's administration put down the heavy hand, and against the Patriot Movement. Previously, propaganda and control elections were sufficient to control the people. Now, along with controlling the media and subverting society, a key part of the strategy of the secret government is to keep the people distracted with issues that will not interfere with their goals of establishing tighter control in a one-world government. This is done by using various propaganda techniques to redirect the people's attention, or actions, rather. Emotional debates and conflicts are created so many people are too busy to notice what is happening to our constitutional rights. The object is to keep the people stupid and ignorant, watching television and sports or other amusements, diverting attention, and keeping people from organizing. In certain respects, our country is like the Roman Empire in its dying days. The citizens watch people being eaten by lions. Today, we are fed hundreds of stories involving crime, sex, and sports. Edward Caliano said, The majority must resign itself to the consumption of fantasy. Illusion of wealth are sold to the poor, illusions of freedom to the oppressed, and dreams of victory to the defeated, and of power to the weak. And Arthur Miller and Democratic Dictatorship called this process the tyranny of technology. Franz Neumann said, the higher the state of the technological development, the greater the concentration of political power, and people will be made to enjoy their enslavement. That was stated by Aldous Huxley, actually, in the Brave New World. A classic example of this strategy is the abortion debate. America is the only nation where the abortion issue is such an intense focus for many. In no other country, even where the Catholic Church is much stronger, is there such an intense abortion debate. The secret government often places provocateurs on opposing sides for an issue to arouse the people. Whether the issue is child abuse, racial tension, the environment, capital punishment, affirmative action, or women's rights. There are many intensely debated issues in our society where this quiet manipulation proceeds. I do not question the sincere beliefs that people have regarding abortion and these other issues, but it is also obvious that millions of people are so involved in these debates, that they have little time to examine what is happening to our Constitution and the government. I also do not claim that the secret government is at work in every issue debated in our society, but at times, this is a key hidden factor. The corporate elite will sometimes set up front groups that supposedly support a cause while they work to weaken the entire movement. That's what you saw that happen with Occupy Wall Street and all the movements. And money is donated and provocateurs are planted in various groups. The secret government wants to control. A classic example of this is corporate infiltration of the environmental movement. Large corporations and foundations support certain environmental groups like the Wilderness Society. The David and Lucille Packard Foundation support the Wilderness Society, which never challenged Hewlett Packard's poor land management in the Challis National Forest. One member of the board of the Wilderness Society is Walter Minnick, CEO of a multinational timber company, and TJ International, which is partly owned and allied with other timber companies that are constantly cutting timber with little regard for the environment. An obvious diversion for many years was the communist threat. The result was and is that anything could be done to justify the national security state. Historically, after each war, America substantially dismantled the military and related industries that supported it. But this did not occur after World War II and the Cold War. Some tried to justify continuing the defense security apparatus by speaking of nuclear proliferation, militias, war on drugs, and third world terrorism, or by using the military for national emergencies to stay on a permanent war footing. On the CBS News, March 19, 1995, there was a report on growing Muslim fundamentalism and its threat to the U.S. Senator John Glenn and the NATO Secretary General described Islamic fundamentalism as even more dangerous than communism. At least one reporter called this absurd and suggested that NATO needed a new threat to justify its existence. There you go. Bertrand Gross, in Friendly Fascism, said, "Technology and corporate central government power are gradually shifting the U.S. towards totalitarianism, buttressed by constitutional restraints and split among the elites. He felt that fascism would come gradually through silent encroachments, and the greater danger would be that this slow process would be unnoticed by most Americans." And it has. This is exactly what's happening now. We're living under a fascist state. It is essential to preserve the facade of democracy while gradually shifting to a police state. The goal is to accustom the American people to the destruction of their freedoms. By the time people realize what is happening, it could be too late. In America, fascism will come from powerful tendencies within the establishment, not from the right or left. The American model of fascism will be pluralistic in nature, and no charismatic dictator, not one-party rule, no mass fascist party, no glorification of the state, no dissolution of legislatures, no discontinuation of elections. William Shire, author of Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, said, "America may be the first country in which fascism takes power through democratic elections." Amazing. The forces that have prevented a friendly fascism from developing, such as strong labor unions and a free press, have been thwarted or subverted by the large corporations. Many labor leaders have become bureaucrats, unable to represent their members. and through mind management and sophisticated repression incentives, punishments, and escape valves have provided to pave the way for friendly fascism. Widespread diversions such as sex, drugs, cults, mental illness, and sports are used to control people, so they will accept servitude and not oppose government policies. The Soma pills, described by Aldous Huxley, in Brave New World, have arrived. In Brave New World, Aldous Huxley said the especially efficient totalitarian state would be one in which the political bosses and managers control a population of slaves who do not have to be coerced because they love their servitude. To make people love their servitude is a task today assigned to the totalitarian states. We accept our bondage partly because we don't even realize that we have become enslaved by the addiction of television and other forms of modern-day propaganda. To become free, we must first recognize our entrapment. A major strategy to delude the people is to transform the countries gradually into a dictatorship, not upsetting the people. CFR member Henry Morgenthau, who was FDR's Secretary of the Treasury, said, "We can hardly expect the nation state to make itself superfluous, at least not overnight. The transition will not be dramatic, but a gradual one." CFR member Philip C. Jessup in The International Problem of Governing Mankind said, "I agree that national sovereignty is the root of evil. The question of procedures remains. Can the root be pulled up by one mighty revolutionary heave, or should it first be loosened by digging around it and cutting the rootlets one by one?" The Fabian socialist H.G. Wells said, "Roosevelt's New Deal was the most effective instrument possible for the coming of the New World Order, and he is continuously revolutionary in a new way without ever provoking a stark revolutionary crisis." And in the next 2 minutes, I just want to read this. An important strategy the secret government uses to maintain controls is to support ambitious people early in their careers. People are promoted if they have demonstrated intelligence, ambition, leadership, and a few morals. These people are corrupted through sex, money, and drugs, with evidence of criminality gathered to blackmail them if necessary. They must follow orders or their careers will be ruined and they may go to jail. This principle is applied to many politicians, but is applied with special care to senior officials like presidents. Once the invisible government chooses someone to become president, the instrument of corporate power distorts the news to protect the chosen one. And boy, they did that with Obama, didn't they? And George Bush. The people are only allowed to participate by voting, which is why many no longer bother. Who will win is decided long before the election day. The CFR and TC don't care which party elects the president, as long as they control each candidate and the people continue to be fooled. And this system guarantees a corporate leadership with a disillusioned populace. And I'm going to end there. Pick it up possibly next week. But just understand, folks, that we have lost our way. We're giving up our liberties for safety. What safety is there? I mean, we have no safety when we have a government who's looming down our backs every second, monitoring our conversations, poisoning our waters, poisoning our air, poisoning our food. This is slavery, folks. This is tyranny at its highest. And the American people are just too fat, dumb, and lazy to appreciate what's going on there. And to see it. And they just eat up everything up through the media. And spoon-fed through the media. And they like it like that. Well, I don't. And I really hope you can pick up a copy of this book by Garudas, Treason, The New World Order. It's such an eye-opener. And none of it is out of date, believe me. Everything he says is almost prophetic words, because it's all happening now, just as he said it would, just as it happened before, and just as it's happening, going to happen in the future, until we decide to end this corporate state, this fascist state that we're in. And with those words, I want to thank everybody for joining me tonight. Hope you enjoyed the show. And if you did, please tell your friends about it. You know, I'd like to hear these words too.